welcome to the Rule of Three with Brian Miller and Tim Slagle. We've got Tim here in Chicago. I'm up here in Minneapolis, and
really, you just gave away some of the mystery of the show.
Oh, you think?
I don't know that people know that we've been at two different spots.
I think it kind of makes it more interesting. It's like pen pals with the internet.
We're actually meeting in cyberspace.
Pod pals. That would make us pod pals instead of pen pals, right? Hey, speaking of two guys who spent a lot of time together, how's that for a transition into our first story? I saw a story that tickled my macabre fancy. The headline, great headline, castaway who survived 14 months at sea sued for cannibalism. Ooh, that's a good headline. Sued for cannibalism is pretty great. Like, I didn't know that was an on-the-books crime, like a specific one. I don't know if that has a punishment that comes especial. But this was unbelievable. And so he's a Salvadorian fisherman.
Usually when you're suing somebody for cannibalism, it's an ongoing process.
Yeah, that's true. You'd sue him for murder. I mean, I think you would sue somebody for cannibalism if you were, like, hopping in on one leg, being like, hey, wait a minute.
Can you point out the gentleman in the court that you swear was eating you? No, I can't.
I could have last week. Jerk your head in the direction of the person who ate your arms. So this guy was from El Salvador, Salvadorian fisherman. He survived, this is unbelievable, 438 days lost at sea, which is just an incredible amount of time.
Yeah, that's over a year.
Yeah, a lot over a year. So, and he was not alone, at least not for a while. It was this fellow's name is Jose Salvador Alvarenga. And he's the world's longest surviving castaway. He and
Gilligan's Island is fiction.
I wonder how long they were supposed to have been gone on Gilligan's Island.
Well, 3 hours.
Well, they were supposed to be gone. I mean, how long were they on the island? I never really got a sense of, you know, the continuity in the 60s TV wasn't exactly.
Yeah, you know, because that's the weird thing about 60s TV when you watch it is that every episode had to be complete.
Absolutely.
I don't think it was until MASH that there actually started to be reoccurring characters and kind of plot lines that wove in and out. I think MASH might have been about the first one. Maybe All in the Family did it, but they never before that. You know, now series, you've got to watch every episode or you're lost.
Which I kind of miss about. That's why old TV works so well, I think, is because you really can just turn it on. It's like, yeah, they're on an island. Anyway, now the Globetrotters are here. Let's see what happens.
Right, right. So, you know, so it could have been, so with Gilligan, it could have been concurrent. You know, it could have been just stories from their castaway. So the professor could have been working on the telephone and the connecting to the cable at the same time that Ginger Grant was putting on the Cleopatra production.
Oh, interesting. I never even thought about it that way.
Yeah.
That's never been remade, kind of, isn't it? Of all the crap that's been remade?
Huh. I'm guessing Sherwood Schwartz is still alive. I'm guessing that's why.
He's hanging on to that copyright with his old hands.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm guessing that's what it is. I'm guessing he said, no, I want this, this, and this. And they're going, nah. It's not that. It's not that good of a reboot.
They'll just wait him out.
And also the improbability that could only exist in 60s television might be a little much.
Oh, they would definitely give it some verisimilitude in the remake. You know, they'd have to give it some grit, I'm sure. But this fella here, Jose, he will probably not get his own show since. It was a rather grim – this is in 2012, by the way. I'm surprised I never heard about this. In 2012, the guy set sail on a small fishing boat from
Mexico. Well, because it's El Salvador. That's why.
Oh, he's Salvadoran, but apparently they left from Mexico.
It's still.
Yeah. So this is what it seemed to be national news. So he paid his 22-year-old guy $50 to go with him on a two-day fishing trip.
That's a bargain.
Yeah. That is a boil. It seemed like it anyway.
So they left from Mexico. The guy who owned the boat was Mexico, and that was the guy that his family's suing, right?
Yeah, yeah. He's being sued.
So, yeah.
The guy who chartered the boat.
Who doesn't enjoy a little Mexican food? Huh?
So they run into a massive storm. They reappear 400, well, one fella reappears 438 days later, 6,700 miles away on an atoll in the Marshall Islands. And so he says, the survivor guy says he survived on raw fish, turtle blood, and urine. Delectable. But hard to get on your Chipotle burrito, by the way, no matter how much you ask.
No, actually, pretty easy, apparently.
Oh, yeah.
The turtle blood's a little scarce, but it would seem that the other is raw fish and urine. Yeah, that's...
Yeah, actually, this guy might have fared better than some of the Chipotle clientele.
How long was he on the atoll?
It didn't say. It just said that he showed back up. I guess there must have been people there. There's a fellow named Jonathan Franklin who wrote a book about it.
Okay. So when he showed up, he was rescued. He wasn't sitting on the atoll for years.
I think so. I think he got to the atoll and got off pretty fast.
Wow. So he was actually at sea the entire time. It was.
Yeah. Oh yeah. He was on the water for 438 days. And he said that his companion, the $50 fishing bargain, could not cope with the diet. And didn't eat and so starved to death. And he says he just he tipped the fellow overboard and gave him a burial at sea. But the family is suing our hero here, saying that he ate his companion. But what's interesting, there's absolutely no evidence of it. They're just saying, well, you must have.
Well, yeah, it seems to me that, you know, that they could have I guess when they go into discovery. You know, they can give him a deep tooth cleaning, see if they can recover any DNA so that they can match. Here's an interesting thing, okay? That just occurred to me: raw fish and turtle blood.
Mm-hmm.
So you just kind of bleed the turtle and throw it back?
Yeah, I wonder that too. Like, do you not eat the turtle, or maybe they just left that part out?
Like, gross. You're gonna eat turtle? Oh.
Yeah, I just saw a movie where somebody eats a raw turtle.
Walking Dead. Walking Dead.
Oh, right, you're right. It was an episode of Walking Dead. You're right.
Man, was that disturbing.
Yeah.
She was holding it like a walking taco.
It kind of is a walking taco. It is like it carries its own utensil, sort of. That's pretty handy. But what they should do, if the lawyer for the family of assuming the guy, when he's doing the cross examination, he'll lean onto the stand and put his arm in front of the guy, and maybe put a little Worcestershire sauce on it. Are you sure you never did anything? I think it's a little bit uncool to sue the guy for cannibalism, because I say, hey, you know what? If the fella died and he ate him.
You see, that's always the question, though. That's always the question with cannibalism: is did he die first?
Well, yes, I suppose. Yeah.
Or did he die around the third course?
Was he an ethically sourced human, or was he? Because if you were in a boat and you croaked, would you be mad if people ate you?
I don't know.
I'm fully of the opinion. To be honest, I'm fine if people eat me when I die on land. I feel like it's not really going to matter to me very much.
Well, but myself, I would want a contract first, and I would want compensation at least to my survivors.
You want the lion's share of the turtle blood and urine before you go?
Well,
you're gonna negotiate yourself a good turtle blood deal on the boat. Then agencies would spring up, you know. Well, he's represented by CAA, so he got three turtles, even though his corpse is totally not funny.
There's actually a song that was a hit in the Detroit area when I was a kid called Timothy. And the basis of that is that three guys get stuck in a mine and only two guys come out.
And Timothy doesn't come out, I assume?
Timothy does not come out. Yeah, it's God, what happened to you, Timothy? God, why don't I know, Timothy?
Better than the first title, Timothy.
And that's the rule of three.
Timothy, Timothy, where on earth did you go? Timothy, Timothy, God, why don't I know?
And we're back with the rule of three. Tim Slagle, Brian Miller.
Hello.
And it's the holidays, Brian.
Yes, it is. For just a few more days.
Yeah, this is probably the last show that we'll do before Christmas. And there's all kinds of Christmas traditions from all over the world. Last week, of course, we talked about the Krampus.
Yes,
which very interesting. A little legend from the land that spawned Hitler.
little Hitler era bedtime story.
and this week, we're going to the Catalan region of Spain, where there is a tradition in the nativity scene. And it's not the zombie Jesus, which I believe we also did last
yes.
week. No. If you have a nativity set in that region of Spain, you will also have a little figurine known as the cajoner. And if you speak Spanish, you know that that's essentially the crapper is what it means.
And, I love that it's a literal translation, too. They don't gussy it up at all.
And basically what the cajoner is a little shepherd boy going number two.
Numero dos. I believe you mean numero dos.
Yeah. Yeah. Tomar un numero dos.
Yeah. And I looked it up. Boy, there's pictures and everything if you Google it.
Well, yeah. The traditional one is just the little shepherd boy. And this is an interesting thing. The reason why they started doing it was because the nativity scene has been really romanticized in Christmas tradition. It's my mom used to actually put snow on the roof of the manger.
Oh, which is obviously not regionally accurate, I assume.
No. And I used to point it out, and I go, "Why do you put the snow on there?" And she said, "Well, that's the only way the angel will set on top there."
That's a practical thing.
Yeah. So it must have, you know, I didn't even think about it. I'm guessing the manger set that she had must have come with the white cotton for the roof of the manger. But it's all the time you see the mangers, you know, the nativity scene with snow and sparkles and stars. And in all the romantic nature of it, you forget what actually that stable smelled like.
Sure. It's a barn, you know. I mean, basically,
It's a barn during census time in Bethlehem. So the barn was full of horses that, you know, that maybe had, you know, had just come back from a 20 mile walk and checked in there to the hotel, and the stable hand gave them some hay. And you know what happens immediately after you give a horse some hay?
You make a new friend?
Cajane, I think. I think the Spanish word is that it was full of crap. The stable where Jesus was born was full of crap, and that in the biblical text you're supposed to realize that, but of course in the romanticization, I wish I could say that. It isn't. So by putting a little shepherd boy with a little pile underneath him, you remember that it stank in there.
Well, no, I also thought it was interesting. I read the article there you sent me, in, or the Wikipedia link, and I liked that in the modern version it said that it's evolved to be also kind of almost a satirical thing, and that a lot of times you would have a representation of a figure maybe you didn't like.
Right,
your kahane could take the form of not just a stable boy, but somebody else that you maybe wanted to lampoon.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Usually they would hide the stable boy. That would be the thing that the kids on Christmas morning that would look for. They go, "Oh, where's that naughty stable boy?"
Like the Waldo of the nativity scene.
Yeah, or maybe like an elf on the shelf, sort of.
Tying it all together. I like it.
Yeah, shepherd boy on the pot. But they would look for it. But then, yeah, in modern times, they now have, you can get pretty much anybody made into a cajoner. You can get Barack Obama. You can get Pope Francis is very, very popular this year. And actually,
I'm sure there's got to be Trumps, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But there's also Bart Simpsons.
Ah, the kind of the modern stable boy, prone to a little.
Well, modern to you and I.
Well, yeah, I guess that's true.
It was 20 years ago. I was watching a Simpsons episode. It was the one where they take over the school on Christmas because they get snowed in.
Oh, a great episode.
And Bart's going through his school records. And he reads, yeah. Underachiever and proud of it. He's going, damn, how old are these records?
I used to have that T-shirt. Oh, man.
But when I Googled, because somebody asked me, they said, is there a Bart Simpson? There should be a Bart Simpson. I looked up, and sure enough, there's a Bart Simpson. But right next to that came up the SpongeBob.
Huh. SpongeBob Kahanier.
Yeah, and of course, underneath the SpongeBob is a little pile of sponges.
Oh, that's great!
which means that SpongeBob is probably also a cannibal as well.
I'm a little surprised that this hasn't not caught on huge, but isn't a little bit more prominent in America. You think this would have, you know?
Yeah, it's got all the bases covered. You know, it's Christmas. It's disrespectful for Christmas, but yet at the same time, it is respectful for Christmas when you understand the motivation behind it. Not only that, what is funnier than Barack Obama with his pants down, squatting over a pile of poop?
Well, it's certainly the oldest lampoon. I mean, you know, you can't go back much to anything more simple than, you know, like here's the king. Oh, but the king's got his pants down. You know, it's a nice leveler. It reminds everybody, hey,
exactly.
You know.
Exactly. It reminds you that the president and the pope are both human beings, and you know, the Pope doesn't put his pants on one leg at a time because he wears a skirt.
That's true.
Although
his name is only one letter away from, you know.
Yeah, you can't spell Pope without P-O-O-P.
You know, it's interesting. I was reading a little bit more about it, and it said that one of the functions it's supposed to serve is actually to, like, heighten the deification of the kind of Jesus part of it, that putting something so kind of low and worldly next to the divine is supposed to sort of enhance the divine, like a little bit of salt on a caramel, you know?
Yeah, but that's what the Christmas story was originally too, though. It was that God actually chose to be born in the most lowly condition possible. I mean, you can't get, you know, we got born with the animals.
Yeah, we have definitely taken away the lowliness of it in various church Christmas pageants.
Right, and it's the three kings. Most of the I've learned this recently. Most of the mystery of the story of the three kings is not in the Bible. Their names, where they came from. It's pretty much just one paragraph in one of the Gospels, if I'm not mistaken.
Do they refer to them as wise men or kings, or are they different? Are there three kings and three wise men?
Well,
or
they're
is
magi.
What
is a magi? A magi isn't really king, is it? It's more of a, I don't know, magician?
Three magicians. Oh, three magicians showing up at your house sounds like a pain.
Brought the Christ child the gift of the linking rings, the unending handkerchief, and the trick deck of cards.
I brought you a hacky closer. Jesus is like, thanks. I got a couple of those myself. I got a closer already. It's going to be pretty good. Trust me.
Yeah.
It takes 33 years to set up, but it pays off like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah. Joseph said, no way are you going to be a magician. Pick up the saw and get to work.
who would you, if you had a cajoner in your nativity scene, who would you want your cajoner to be?
I think I would just go traditional. I like just the traditional. I like the comedy, you know, the satire part of it. But I like just a little stable boy. And the funny part is, if you actually bought one, if you have someone who has a nativity scene and you bought one and put it in the nativity scene, they probably wouldn't notice it until they were putting it away.
Ooh, he's the little dumper boy.
Yeah, it's like, where the heck did this come from? This is not my nativity scene.
Yeah, well, that should be our goal for our holidays. We should buy a bunch of cajoneers and just sprinkle them through nativity scenes as we go and see who notices. Say, sorry, we're just trying to make it more authentic. What, do you got
scene.
Something against the Spanish people?
And if you got something against us, send us an email. But we're done for this segment.
Oh, here comes Fatty with a sack of shit. Here comes Fatty with a sack of shit. Here comes Fatty with a sack of shit and all them stinking reindeer. Well, I believe in Santa Claus. Yeah, I believe that he's a prick.
And welcome back to the third segment of Rule of Three, the last Noel Yuletide themed Rule of Three segment. We're talking presents. What are you getting? What are you wanting? What do you really want? That's the question. I was thinking about this in the shower the other day. What am I telling people that I want, and what is it that I really want? Do you have you got anything off the top of your head?
You know, I never know what to tell people when they ask me, what do you want? And I know some people are really specific about it. They know exactly what they want.
Mm-hmm.
I could probably do this. Over Thanksgiving, my mom said that she wanted new knobs for her range.
All right.
That's a
Google away.
Yeah, apparently she had bought a new range, and she was cleaning it. And she goes, oh, I'll just pop these knobs off and stick them in the dishwasher. And all the chrome flaked off.
Did you get her some knobs?
I got her some knobs. Do you know how much knobs cost for a range?
No, but that's a very funny sentence.
Oh, my Lord. It 48 bucks a piece.
Are you kidding me?
No, and there's five of them.
That's insane.
Yeah.
They just know that you've got the range. If you need the knobs, you're going to pay. That's like Apple charging you $30 for the wire to hook up your iPod.
Right. So I talked to a couple sisters, and they said, yeah, let's go in on it. And one sister said, does she know how much those things cost?
There's no way. I would never have guessed that.
Yeah.
It's got $10 a piece written all over it. At most.
And she says, I'm not going to do that because it's like, here, Mom, here's a knob for your, you know, we each give her a knob for, you know, here's her Christmas, or we each give her a knob.
Right.
You know, it's like, thanks. And she said, hey, she can't know how much it costs. And my guess is she does know how much it costs.
That's why she asked, maybe.
That's why she wants it. Yeah. Basically, and I'm bringing this around, basically, she asked for something that she wants. But doesn't want to buy herself because it would grind her that she would have to pay $300 for a moment of stupidity. Just because she was too lazy just to wipe the knobs off in the sink that she actually had to stick them in the dishwasher. And what I did, and I think this is clever. This is clever as heck. Is that I made a jewelry box.
Ah.
And I mean a nice jewelry box too. I got a suede box with a hinge on it from eBay, and then I lined it with red satin, and then actually made like a cardboard stand on the bottom that I covered with the red satin as well, so that the knobs it's in a presentation box.
Sure, like dueling knobs.
So when you open it up, it looks like jewelry, and in the box itself. Because it doesn't rattle, because they're all, you know, they're all stuck in there. It looks like she's going to pick it up and she's going to shake it. She's going to, oh, there's some nice jewelry in here. yes, there is, but it's for your range.
Yeah, that's actually pretty nice. I know what you mean too. I do think a good. I mean, the problem with Christmas presents as an adult is if you're even a remotely functional adult, if you want something, you just get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that always vexes me. So I wind up doing the thing where I, starting in about October, if I start to want something, you know, I see something, I'm going to grab that. I go, you know what? That'd be easy for somebody to get me. Someone's going to insist, you know, my wife or my mother's going to insist on getting me something. I'll just hold off on that one. So I
– So you give them a list? You give them a list like still like Santa?
My mother will get me several things, regardless of what I ask for. And I tried to ask for nothing for a couple of years, and I just got real random stuff. I got very random, clothes and just stuff I don't need and cluttery stuff. So I said, well, you know what? If we got to do, we got to do it. So, yep, I make the old school list and send it to my mommy at 35 years old, and it feels ridiculous every time I do it.
Wow.
But I'm so opposed to – I don't like having stuff around. I'm kind of a minimalist. I just don't like having a lot of stuff. And so if I'm going to get more stuff that I've got to contend with, I might as well, you know, make sure it's stuff I actually want.
Stuff I need.
Right. So, I haven't probably bought an article of clothing for myself in a decade just because I just go like, all right, I guess we're due for a new pair of jeans here. Yeah, my mother's very traditional with Christmas, so this year what I said that I want is the new Stephen King book, which is true, but I would have just purchased it like a regular person. but what do I really want? That was what I was thinking, and I think what I want is no workers to ever cross the threshold of my house again. I say that as I hear heavy steel-toed booted footsteps stomping above me like really loud, obnoxious reindeer about to start up their power saw during my sleep. And I don't know if Santa would have to stand outside and just like a bouncer and keep them from entering my house, or if they would magically just disappear. I don't know how one would work that out.
Yeah, they're on the job usually at 7 a.m., aren't they?
7 a.m. They start 7:08 this morning. I heard somebody cutting tile right above my head.
Wow.
And keep in mind, this is how many podcasts this has been a theme for? I mean, this has been 2 months now.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Well, oh, but the tile. So, I mean, they had that diamond saw, right?
Yep. That diamond saw just
set on the floor.
Tile. Yep. Setting up on the floor, just vibrating the floor right above my head at 7:08.
Wow.
So, if anybody's
on the bright side, there's no chance on you being late to Skyline.
I haven't overslept for anything at all in a long time. Usually when I go on the road, I'm a little bit dreading the being away from my house part because I like my house and my comfort. And I was like, man, I'm going to get to sleep comfortably for 3 days in Appleton. This is going to be great.
Well, I don't know about that. They still got that condo?
Yeah, I like that condo. I find that condo very comforting for some reason. Huh. I think it's because I've gone there so many times.
Because it's like home?
It does. I realize I've spent more than a month of my life there. Because I work there fairly often and I've spent many nights there. So yeah, I've got food items, tea and some silverware and sugar that I like and stuff that lives there that I just keep.
You know the weird thing about that condo is I'm pretty sure that I've stayed at that condo elsewhere.
What do you mean?
That design of that condo in Appleton is not unique.
Huh.
I am pretty sure that there's been condos elsewhere on the road, and I can't place it, that are the exact same layout with kind of the split level with the balcony with what's supposed to be the dining room or the family room overlooking the living room.
Yep, which they walled off and is now
they
a third
walled
room.
Off for the MC. Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you? Yeah. And this will, by the way, I guess if anybody listens to this, it'll probably be a little late, but I'll be in Appleton the weekend before Christmas, if anybody wants to swing by, if you want to get a time machine.
I might actually try to get this one up before the weekend. So maybe.
Hey, there you go. Appleton, Wisconsin. Great club.
You never know. You never know.
So, and what is it? So, what is it that you really want for Christmas?
You know what? I don't know. I know I need a new phone.
Sure.
But, you know, that's one of those things that I can't trust anyone to get it for me.
No, that's a really specific thing. That's kind of very personal.
You know, and it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be, but I'm particular. I'm particular about my gadgets. It's, you know, if somebody just went and they got me a phone, you know, I would end up with like an LG or something like that, or a BlackBerry.
Yeah, yeah, right. You're like, oh, a BlackBerry jitterbug. Thanks.
So I do need a phone, and that's. But like I said, I don't trust anyone, and that's my position is that if you can't find something to get me, you don't know me well enough to be shopping for me.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's kind of my opinion there. I know I had a brother-in-law that used to actually write it down right where with the model number. And even then, that didn't work for him. So he started pulling pages out of the catalogs and circling
stuff.
It's like, you know, at this point, why don't we just all buy ourselves what we want and wrap it up and then give it to someone to get, you know, here, you know what I mean? Rather than having to shop for someone else, why don't we just everyone shop for themselves and then wrap it up and then give it to the other person to give it back to them on Christmas?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. The idea of like the, I always thought that was weird, like the meticulous list that then is like carried out. It's almost more just like an Amazon order that you give to a human being.
Right.
It's very right. strange.
And trust them to get it right.
Yeah, exactly. Like my wife always gets me something. I'm always like, oh yeah, I wouldn't have thought of that. That's cool. But yeah, so if somebody can make 3 to 5 workmen disappear.
Three missing workmen.
Oh, that would be a Merry Christmas indeed for this guy.
It's I think that's my second and final song for this today's episode of Rule of Three. Merry Christmas, everyone.
Yes, and, Merry Christmas to all and to all a good pod.
And we'll see you probably the week before New Year's.
Yeah, see you then.